How you doing, Zach?
Tired.
Yeah. You managing though pretty good, huh?
This last 10 days, like, we're almost finished tonight.
Well, again, happy Ramadan.
Thank you.
All right. The recording has started. Thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. This is the meeting of the Community Services and Safety Committee. I'm here with my fellow council members, Councilmember Edan and Councilmember Quinn, as well as members of the city staff. On tonight's agenda, our first agenda item, give me 1 second, I have so many windows open, is the 2021 Parks and Recreation Capital Project. And we have Chris Kelly, who's going to be talking to us about it today. Or Tracy, are you, is it Chris or are you?
I can handle the,
it's
the
Chris,
projects portion. So just a little bit of background. This is some of the projects we brought to CSS and council end of last year. As we were kind of getting into the bulk of the work, the winter months, we got a lot of the work done at Foster Park and Crestview Park, as well as some trails. And then this spring, we'll be able to go back in and kind of finalize some of the projects that the weather started to get better. We have some nets to put up for the pickleball court at Foster. We have some art pieces that we're going to put along the trail, as well as Crestview, tying in some of the drinking fountain that we added to the dog park portion, some more art there. And I guess the other update would be that we hired J.A. Brennan to start the master plan process for the pond. And then I had two contracts as well that we're bringing, hopefully bringing to council for security at several parks. We have it currently at Cascade View Park. Sergeant Zach Anderson is highly recommending we have it at the other parks, so we are bringing it to the community center, Cotega Park, Tukwila Pond Park, and Crystal Springs Park. So kind of more of our active parks that could use some help with some security. And the company that we're recommending is the one we have at Cascade View, and actually Zach's going to recommend they do that on the when they transfer over TIB and that system. So we're very happy with the system. So the that first contract is those four parks all at once. The other contract is to resurface all of our tennis courts, which haven't been done since I've been here and probably maybe a decade before that. So Crystal Springs Park, as well as both courts at Tukwila Park, and it's also going to include the resurfacing, some of the damaged areas, and also striping it for tennis and pickleball. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, if there's, you know, questions.
Thank you. Council members, Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of kind of rapid fire questions, and, you know, I leave it up to the chair about how deep we go on these, but one question, maybe overarching question as it relates to security is just, you know, kind of getting a sense of status quo, some of the considerations going in to what security is for and how it's a benefit to the public. And then maybe just kind of measuring across the city, like where, you know, a market improvement, you know, are we moving the needle on a couple of key things, you know, and then also kind of having a baseline of what's needed. And you can assume that, you know, we've all heard in different spaces around security and community describes it in many different ways. And, you know, and then there's also kind of a different experience when you live there, you notice things. You know what kind of continued problems are. So I'd be curious around measures and how we move the needle to kind of have a greater improvement, because in the end, I think it is to preserve people's opportunity to enjoy the neighborhood park kind of the same way or across the city in the same way. And then the second thing is just kind of thinking about some of these capital projects and maybe programming or at least discussing the how often we if you hear something that sounds like smacking, that's a dog that has a droopy face. That's what happens when you draw a short straw on where your virtual meeting will be held. just more of, you know, kind of how we have a regular process for making sure we maintain a level across the park where it doesn't require more money because we waited for some time. And then I think I'd just be generally interested in kind of the public message around security, why we're doing it, why it's a benefit. And I think I think that's it. Sorry.
Did someone
respond? I mean, I didn't really hear a question. I just hear more of a recommendation. I would have to work. I mean, it's a kind of a weird balance, right? Because we're the Parks Department, we're not police. So it's really not for our use, but we're trying to create a safe space. So I can try to work with police on because you're right, we want to promote the right message. So we don't want to give a bunch of terrible numbers. So I can work with police on the benefits that they have and maybe some overarching advantages of having it.
I think it's just more of a measure that you guys internally have. Because you also, I mean, I understand there's definitely the police side.
Yeah.
But the goal is to have that a certain base experience in using a park.
Right.
You know, you can go there, you can have your events there, you can have your kids present. You know, we want to make sure that at night it's not a nuisance in a neighborhood because there's, you know, not that many eyes except for those that live immediately next to, and it just helps. And I remember what my last question was, you know, I'm assuming that this is folded in with the SEPTED stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know, so about, you know, kind of, and so like folding that into the message around, you know, hey, we're pruning this bush consistent with SEPTED and, you know, that there's, so that there are eyes on the park. You know, this is, you know, we put this bush here as a screen versus a, you know, so things like that. Because I think the more we fold in what is our policy, what is good public policy as it relates to parks and how we use them and how we make sure it's safe for everyone. So I think I'd like to hear a little bit more of how SEPTED is built into some of this too.
Okay.
If I might jump in, this is Tracy Galloway. I just wanted to say that I would say that the surveillance system that we're talking about is like one of the tools in the toolkit. There's lots of pieces in that toolkit that we use. Some of it is the SEPTED techniques to, you know, clear viewing posts and things like that. The other, you know, another good tactic that we can use is just making sure we're programming the parks so that there's good, active, positive use that helps drive away some of the other uses that aren't so positive. So I think it's just part of the tools in our toolkit, and I think that's part of our messaging too is, you know, this isn't the only measure. And you know, we've had instances where at the community center, for example, there's an expectation of, oh, because there's cameras, you can do X. or like if there's an incident and there's footage, how can that be used? And so we have to be clear of, you know, what is a reasonable expectation around that as well. So we can definitely work on that messaging.
Zach, do you have any questions? Let's stay on the surveillance camera one, and then we can go on to this, because these are two different contracts, right, that we're requesting approval of. So let's stay on the camera one, and then we'll move on to the tennis court improvement. Zach, do you have any questions about the surveillance camera request?
Yeah, I think I have one or two. One is the one that's what is if something happens in the park as a resident and you want to get a footage, what is that look like? I want to know that.
Yeah, they. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, they have a retainage capacity based on the volume of time that's captured. So if it's a active location that's constantly got 24-hour movement, the time window for retainage is down to about a week, or it can be up to several months based on how active that camera is.
But do we know then if it's 24 hours or a week? Is that something that you can...
But I think that the smallest amount, if it ran 24 hours, would be a week. But I can get the exact numbers.
Yes. Okay, that would be helpful. The other broader question I had is, was this identified on the February meeting where we talked about the pros, or this is just an addition of what that just came up with police and stuff? I'm just trying to get a clarity around if this was included in the capital project plan.
So we brought cameras to Cascade View Park through council over a year ago. And then when we went about the capital projects last time, it was about security, and we had talked about more cameras or possible lighting in some of the parks.
So this is captured within what was presented back in February?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I have something that's not directly related, Chair, but something that relates to the capital project that I would like to bring in. If we move on and I wait for miscellaneous, I believe the parks folks would leave the meeting. And I want them to hear that. I don't know if you want me to address that or just wait until we finish this item.
I have some questions just about the security cameras, and then we'll talk about the tennis courts, and then I'll have you bring up the what you wanted to address in the capital projects. Does that sound good?
Sure thing. That's
okay.
Thanks,
Zach. I don't remember if I was on council when the cameras at Cascade View were approved, but just in general, I think my line of questioning is really along the lines of what Deshaun was saying. Really, I'm just wondering if there could just be more explanation of the need for security cameras now. Since we've installed them at Cascade View, you know, have there been an increase in, has there been a decrease in crime in that neighborhood? Have they been able to, stop people from committing crimes? I just want to know what the impact of the cameras have been on the community, because with the security cameras, I feel like we're balancing, not just the safety, but all like, and I think some people in our community may say that they don't feel safer being surveilled. They don't feel safer with cameras around. And that they, you know, things like lighting could help them feel more safe. But I do, you know, I think at least I would feel more comfortable moving forward if there was more explanation as to why we need these now, and how they're improving safety in our parks. And I don't know if there's a limit on this quote, I saw that there was like a provision in the other contract that we're going to talk about, that the quote is only valid until a certain time period. But if it's something that could come back to us, that would be great, because I mean, at this point, I don't feel comfortable moving forward without a deeper explanation about how these surveillance cameras are going to improve safety and why now? Why are they needed now? Whereas those funds could also be used for other projects, programming, capital projects within the Parks Department. So those are just my initial thoughts.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. All right, Deshaun, do you have anything additional?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of, again, I guess to build on some of the things that you said, and then also knowing we've had problems in key parks where they've actually wanted cameras and people have used their own personal home computers home cameras to try to deter activity. So I'll give you an example. Riverton Park, a couple of years ago, that was a really big challenge. So I think it's just the acknowledgement. And I think as Tracy had said, is these are one of the tools. And there are many tools that get used. But I do know, and I think I've heard it directly from residents around an interest in having some level of surveillance at the parks for nothing else than to know that somebody's looking it over when the sun goes down. And, you know, I know there were some other challenges in the park of 124th. Of a lot of kind of unfortunate activity occurring exclusively in the evening time. And so, and then just maybe around the process around, you know, you're going to, you know, it's kind of like you're on school property or whatever, you know, as a part of using it, this is, you know, what, and then I also know that there's a potential efficiency issue with law enforcement. I don't want to speak for them, but around, you know, where there is low staffing, there is this kind of integrated network. It made me think about like the neighborhood resource center and how those things are used in that way. And there was a general understanding, there was volunteer activity around it. And so I just think bringing that holistic message to this item is also a responsibility in public service around why we're doing things the way we're doing them and what benefit or what issues have been addressed by things that the residents have brought to us. And this is the response or the answer, or this is a way that we can maximize, you know, kind of having a good amount of parks across the city and managing them and then thinking about. And the last thing I'll say is the one park, which was historically a challenge near, I forget the name of the park, but it's near McMicken, but it's on the backside of the hill where there's only a few residents and it's a dead end street and there were challenges associated. So I do think it's a responsibility, but it's also a great opportunity to explain the what's in the public service that is provided for these things, you know, just kind of that traditional, like, we do good things, but we don't talk about them, so that people know those good things are happening or that there's the additional steps and things that are happening. And without a narrative, people will add their own narrative.
So just for a little clarification, and I'm more than happy to come back with more information, the locations, if you kind of notice, there are not a lot of residents around them. They're kind of high traffic for vehicle, like Cotega and Tuck Pond. and even Crystal, where they would be, or just near the restrooms and tennis courts. So it's mainly been residents that have brought to the police attention, and then police recommended this for those. But I'm happy to talk with PD and get a lot of the numbers, because I know Trina can pull them up, you know, really quickly. So going forward, I'm just going to take notes that we're not going to go to pass this on to the council, and then we'll come back with more information.
Yes.
Okay.
Laurel, I saw you had your hand up.
Thank you. Chris clarified what I was going to ask. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on to the tennis court improvement. Zach, did you have any questions about that particular contract? No? Are you good with it? Okay. Deshaun?
Just what I said before around planning capital investment so we can maximize our investment.
Are you talking I'm just clarifying what I think I heard you say, which was, could you explain the rotation or sort of the nature of when we do improvements, since you said, you know, it's been a long time since we've made improvements to the tennis courts. Like, is there some kind of formula that you guys use to say, oh, it's been 10 years, we should probably do this?
Yeah, I mean, the formula is we kind of rate them every year, our assets, and we do an inventory on them, and they kind of get a grading system to see how they are, and based on use and everything else. So this, to clarify, Council Member Quinn, it didn't cost any more because we took longer. Luckily, they're in decent shape still. But you're right, that's what we don't want to do. We don't want to go down the road of now we waited so long, we have to build the whole thing again. So we definitely hear what you're saying.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn, are you comfortable with them moving forward with this contract? Okay. I'm also comfortable this one can move forward. I think, were they both slated for consent?
I believe so.
Okay. We'll move this one to consent. And the other one, Chris, you'll come back to us with more information once you were able to connect with the police department?
Correct.
Thank you so much. And then stay for a second, because I believe Councilmember Don had one more thing for parks, if you can. Appreciate your guys' time.
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to know more about is how projects, especially in parks, are developed. And I think we're looking into the PROS plan, it talks about project types, so it doesn't really go into the details of specific projects other than what's on the CIP. So one particular project that I've brought up in the past is creating access on the turf fields, especially some of the parks that have I think your standard grass fields now, and I wanted to see how we can incorporate that project into a capital project.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely use the PROS plan as our guide because they do that legwork of getting the community needs. The other huge determining factor is dollars available. So when you look at our land that we have that can hold a field of the nature you're thinking of, that's a big ticket item, and a lot of other infrastructure that goes along with a turf field with drainage and parking and then lights probably and all that goes along with it. So I know that's been in the works. Councilmember Don, I know that Rick had mentioned that before, and I've done some legwork on starting to get some initial costs for that. As far as though the process, we really go through the PROS plan and the community needs and input.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious on what, you know, at this stage, you know, where does that fit on? Do you have all the information you need to bring something to us? And how soon can you get some information to our levels so we can take a look at that?
Yeah. So like I said, I've been doing some legwork. The first push was kind of the security issue that we were trying to address with those kind of dollars allocated. I have numbers on the actual turf itself. And then the next step was going to be starting to involve some of the other players of the retention pond that would go with it. And we were going to bring out Musco Lighting to do like a, see what the lighting would impact the neighborhoods and things like that. So as far as a timeline, I don't have one right now. I can make sure make this.
And that's fine. So lastly, you know, I want to say that they were a community organization that reached out directly to the city, and we passed that information. And I think Council Member Delastrinas have passed that information to the administration. So there's potential partnership that could be out there. I don't know if you were familiar with that. So I would urge you to look into that and see if there is something there to partner.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it was the Somali Health Board had reached out to us earlier this year. There was a King County Parks grant opportunity that, I mean, it's passed at this point, but I know, you know, you said it's all based on the funding that you receive. And I imagine a lot of it is grant funded for some of these projects. And I think maybe Zach's question is, well, how does one get on that radar of, you know, being a partner with the city to apply for a grant? Since I'm sure a turf field, as you said, Chris, is going to cost a lot because we're talking about drainage and lighting and parking and all those other improvements. But it is something that community members have come to me about as well as Zach. And I think Rick had told me that there, you know, you guys were looking into the turf fields as well. So we would be excited to review something once you have numbers pulled up, just so even we have an idea of how much something like that would cost.
So if I could add one more thing, mm-hmm. The one thing, Councilmember Redon, we were also, and I think we still are waiting to get our lease agreement, because the couple of locations that we do have the actual acreage for it, we are not under a current lease agreement.
And it was with the school district, I think.
Yeah, so Foster, Riverton, those school district properties that we maintain, the leases are up, and we've been working on it, and there's been a little bit of delay.
We do have a meeting set up next week to discuss that with the school district, though.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you, Chris. Thanks, Tracy. You're welcome to stay on, and you could leave. I don't think you need to stay necessarily. But thank you guys for your time.
Thanks so much.
And you're
welcome. Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda are updates on emergency management and work plan. And we have Mindy Mattson here with us today. Hi, Mindy.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm just going to dive right in here. I just wanted to start by introducing myself, and then I'll pop over to a PowerPoint. I promise it's only 5 slides. It's brief. I'm going to try and keep this at a higher level. And if you have, you know, want more information or for me to go into more granularity on anything, I'm happy to do that. So my name is Mindy Mattson. I've worked in emergency management in one format or another for probably the last almost 20 years, coming up on 20 years. The last 13 have been with the city of Renton, which I think put me in a good position to be a neighbor of Tukwila for all those years through Howard Hansen and all of that. So when this opportunity came up to come join your team, I was really excited about it. In terms of my philosophy with regard to emergency management, it's been really made clear to me over the years that communities that are strong and healthy prior to an emergency have such a better positioning to come out to respond and to recover on the other end more successfully. So I really appreciate being part of an organization that seems very committed to building a strong and healthy community. And I see all kinds of benefits for how that will help us when we have really bad days. I'll tell you, it's a really exciting day for me and for the city and for the state, because tomorrow Shake Alert goes live. And if you're not familiar with it, it's an earthquake early warning system that's been many, many years in making. And it comes in through your phone, and it gives you an opportunity to have just a few seconds heads up when an earthquake happens. So you can get under a table, you can get out of an elevator, you can open up the firehouse doors, whatever you need to do in those few seconds to keep yourself safe. So you'll see more information this week on social media that I'll be pushing out about how to make sure that you're all set to receive your shake alerts. So I don't know. I think it's exciting. So I'll go ahead and pop up a PowerPoint and just run through this real briefly and then answer any questions that you might have. So the things I want us to get from the end of this is a kind of an understanding of where we're at with regard to emergency management, and then an understanding of where we're going, what my vision is. And of course, I'm always open to input from folks on that. So what I've done since I've been here, I started mid-February. I've done a pretty comprehensive plans review, and I was looking at that through the lens of the plans that were statutorily required to have up-to-date and up-to-date plans on file with the state. And the reason that's important is because having those plans means that it can impact our eligibility for grant funding for a lot of things that you wouldn't think would have anything to do with emergency management. So the most important one of those is the Emergency Management Performance Grant. I'm sorry, it's not. The most important one of that plan is the Comprehensive Emergency Management Plan, and I'll get to that one in a minute. I did secure funding for 2021 through the Emergency Management Performance Grant, which is the MPG. It's only a little over $11,000, so it's not big money, but it's going to go a long way to helping me continue to build out the Emergency Operations Center and really get it all fine-tuned so that it's ready to be stood up at a moment's notice. The Comprehensive Emergency Management Plan, I have finished a draft of that. The next step of that is to get that to the state, which I did last week, and then they will review it. They told me their timeline was about 2 weeks to a month, and then once it's been approved by the state, it will come before the full council for adoption. And that basically spells out who does what in the city of Tukwila when we have a larger event. So it'll be good to have a current one of those in place. It has to be renewed every 5 years. So because of the timing of when I came in, the process wasn't very collaborative. I just kind of had to get it done so that we could stay in compliance. But the next time we update the plan, it'll be a very comprehensive process. The next big thing that's coming up for me and us in emergency management is the Cascadia Rising earthquake exercise. And the city of Tukwila participated in the first evolution of this, which took place in 2016. And basically the scenario is a full rip 9.0 Cascadia subduction zone fault earthquake. And so this exercise will include Washington, Oregon, California, and British Columbia also plays with this. State, federal agencies. It's a big exercise. So we'll be working toward that. It's taking place in June of 2022. And so the training and exercise plan is basically the roadmap to get us from where we're at right now in terms of being prepared for that to where we need to be to participate in that exercise. It'll be primarily an EOC, Emergency Operations Center exercise. So before that happens, we'll be having EOC staff training to make sure the people who are supposed to work in the EOC know what they're doing. We'll have elected officials training, and usually those are done regionally, so you'd have the opportunity to participate with council members from other councils and elected officials. And then if you're amenable to it, I would love to do a tabletop exercise with the council just to talk through the scenario and talk through some of the things in a really relaxed, no threat environment, so we can sort of think about things that we don't think about on a day-to-day basis and make sure everyone understands and feels comfortable with what their role would be if we had an earthquake like that. And then we'll be doing other tabletop exercises with EOC staff and other folks, and then some mini activations of the EOC. So it's sort of a crawl, walk, run approach to getting us to where we need to be with some different facets to it. So that's where we're at. So where we're going, and these are in no particular order, and I don't always get to choose the order of the things that I want to work on because things like Shake Alert come up, and then we have mall shootings, and we have global pandemic. So things will get shifted around, but the EOC is a beautiful facility. It's, you know, state of the art, has all kinds of gorgeous technology in there. But I have a lot of work to do to make sure that we have everything ready to make sure that we can open it up on a moment's notice if we need to. So that will be a big focus, is getting that EOC and the radio room down there built out. And then having it ready. The people have to know what they're supposed to do. The plans have to be in place. So I'm working on that now, and that'll be a process that takes place between now and when we do the exercise in June of 2022. And then I also have to create the exercise. So I have to, you know, do all the background work and everything to make sure that it's a smoothly running exercise and it accomplishes what we try to accomplish. I want to build out a budget. There's been a little bit of ambiguity with what the emergency management budget is going to look like. It didn't come across from when the position was changed from fire to police. There's kind of some gray area. So I just want to make sure that I can put forth something next time you're ready to talk about, or the city is ready to talk about, what an emergency management budget really needs to look like. So I'll be building the budget out. And then we have a backup EOC at Station 52, so once I make sure that the primary EOC is up and running, we'll make sure that that backup EOC also gets up and running, and that folks who are EOC staff are equally comfortable if they can't deploy to their primary location. We need to get plans on a revision schedule. I'm not a fan of writing a plan and then putting it in a binder and it becoming shelf art. Plans are kind of living things, and in order to make sure that they'll actually function when you need them, you have to train to the plan and you have to exercise the plans regularly. So we'll be writing new plans, and when I say we, I think I mean me, and then we'll be holding trainings and exercises to make sure that we have good plans and plans that actually do work. I'd like to at some point address staff preparedness, because we're only as prepared for a disaster as our people are, because they are the ones who are going to be tasked with some of the complicated things that we'll need to do when we have a disaster. So I want to make sure that they have what they need in order to prepare their homes and their families so that they can come to work. Bottom line, we need them. And then working on developing a public-facing presence, doing public education, and having a strategy. And I'm doing a lot of work to try and learn about the community, because I am new to Tukwila, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. We're not going to come up with something that'll cause every single household to magically become prepared in Tukwila. It's probably going to be more of a throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks. So I look forward to bringing some creativity to how we educate and interact with our public regarding disasters. And then partnerships are essential to everything that I do. I'm a tiny little division of one person, so it's really important to me that I get out there in the community and I get to know the business owners, the school district, lots of community organizations doing great things out there, and all of them should be part of a comprehensive emergency management program. And we have a saying that we've used for a lot of years in emergency management and in first responder organizations, that we do the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And to me, when I thought about that long enough and hard enough, I realized that it meant we were doing the greatest good for the people that it was the easiest to help. And to me, that's not a comprehensive emergency management strategy. We need to make sure that anything we do is focused on making sure we're delivering services to the entire community. So that is the down and dirty quick version of what I've been up to. There's my contact info, and I will stop sharing my screen so that if you have any questions, I can look you in the eye virtually and answer them for you.
Mindy, thank you so much for your presentation, and welcome to Tukwila. I think we're really lucky to have you here with us. I mean, just based on your quick and dirty presentation, it's clear you know what you're doing. And so, we're excited to have you. Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions for Mindy?
No, a comment. Thank you for your professional presentation. You come with a lot of experience, including the Howard Hanson Dam and really identifying where our weaknesses are. So hopefully we don't have to kind of repeat those basic things that were learned, right? We lost residents and we lost folks countywide just because we weren't reaching people. But I think you said it in a nutshell with your last statement, and maybe I'll reframe it and then let me know if it's acceptable, which is when we have a system that could focus on the margins, then we bring the middle along as well.
Yeah.
Because in the end, this is about getting to people who most need it. And that then informs how we meet the folks that do have access or can reach through traditional communication lines. So I actually look forward to your continued presentations and not making assumptions about what you can and cannot do, because I know that, again, a lot of lessons in the Howard Hanson Dam, some deadly, and I know you bring that information forward.
Thank you.
Councilmember Edan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I also, share the same comments that Councilmember Quinn has shared, but just looking at where we're going, it seems like a lot of work ahead of us. So I liked your quick and dirty presentation. I think it gets to really to the core of what you're trying to accomplish in a very simple way. I wonder if, you know, you could do the same thing in one of the whole council meeting, just very high level like you did. It's really great information. It's also meet you and welcome to Tukwila. I'd like you to have you. That's all for me. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
I would second that. I think your presentation would be a great one to have at like a larger council meeting where the community could also hear. You made me excited about emergency preparation and just how important it is. So, you know, I think that's a win. That's a good presentation. And like Deshaun said, I'm excited to see where you see gaps, particularly in our community, especially with the value that you shared with us of wanting to make sure that we're finding where those margins are, those who are least likely to know about this information. Let's figure out how we can find them and them first. Everybody else will come. But yeah, thank you so much for your presentation today, and I hope we can get you scheduled for a bigger council meeting. I see David. He's like, yeah, we can do that. Great.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. The next item on our agenda, fire department reports. Chief Whitwer, you've got the floor.
Thank you. Jay Whitwer, your fire chief. And I do want to just weigh in on Mindy Madsen. I've had an opportunity to work close with her, especially when she first was onboarding with the city. And we're really happy to bring a quality person like Mindy that has experience not only in emergency management, but in the region. Saturday, I got to spend some time with her as well at the mall, as we had an event there. She did respond out. That speaks a lot about who she is. So it was nice to visit with her, and I even gave her a ride back to the Justice Center, so we were able to visit a little bit more and also took care of some other duties that day. So Mindy, welcome to the team. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Chief, and thank you for the ride.
You're welcome. So tonight, I know we are short of time, but I do have the annual report that I'm going to go through. I'm going to go through it rather quickly and then save some time at the end for some question and answers. So I will share my screen. And my assumption is you can see the screen. So to begin with, 2020 annual report. The focus is really on our activities, the events, and our personnel. One thing that we do pride ourselves here in the city of Tukwila are those employees that serve the community. And that is exactly the case here with the fire department. Our department is filled with employees that truly care about the community. And as they interact with the community day in and day out, they are providing a very high level of service to our community, as many of you have been recipients of that service as well. Of course, I have a short message here just talking about the department and some of the things that have taken place. I also had the mayor weigh in. He wrote a very eloquent letter to the community and to the department. City Council, of course, we welcomed a new council member, Council Member Johnson. We're thrilled to have you, and I can't envision a more handsome group of City Council members. The next slide is actually of our department. I really kind of went through pretty quick here. They are quite small, but these are photos of all of our department members. Of course, I want to highlight is that we do put our Tukwila residents at the top, that they really are the most important thing as we come to fill that need every day. Our fire stations are highlighted here. Even though Station 52 opened in February, we felt that it was important to highlight that photo as well. This past year, we have opened two new stations, Station 51, which is at 180th and Tukwila Park, or Tukwila Parkway, or South Center Parkway, as well as Station 52, which is on the City Hall campus. Calls for service. So this is really the first thing where we dive into what we've been doing and how we've been doing. This really does explain what calls for service are, what response times are, what our fire loss is within our community. Cardiac arrest save rate remains to be high within the city of Tukwila. We're fortunate we haven't had that many each year, but those that we do have, we have very good results. Adopted emergency service performance standards. Of course, that was adopted through Resolution 1977 in December of 2019 by the City Council. And this just explains what each of those performance measures are and what that means. The following page breaks that down even more. I'm not going to take the time to go into each one because it's just basically would be regurgitating what's here on this page. We remain at a very high level in the high 80s and 90s in each of the areas percentage-wise. On this page at the bottom, so bottom of page 39, are just three photographs that represent the many things that we do. We've had a couple of operations on the river where cars have gone into the river, as well as some high winds this past year and our crews responding out to that. And then this is almost a weekly event where we have a vehicle fire, whether it be out on I-405 or I-5 or other places within the community. This just breaks out our five-year history of the volume and type of calls. I will just highlight this real quickly is that in the year 2020, of course, we all are familiar with the worldwide pandemic, and because people were not on the road and shuttered in their homes for the most part, our call volume did drop in 2020, and you have been receiving updates on that throughout the year, so I'm not going to go into that too much. You can see again the history of calls are highlighted here by year and what the breakdown is. And we stay pretty consistent with our percentages throughout those 5 years and beyond that as well. This demonstrates to you where the percentage of calls are taking place. Of course, station 54 and 51 have traditionally been our higher volume stations because of the call volume that takes place in those various locations. We are seeing that change slightly, and we'll be able to reflect those numbers as we're going into 2021 with the movement of those station 51 and station 52. Average response times, again, has stayed very consistent with past years. Same with average response times. I know this chart is a little deceptive in the fact that there's only 5 seconds difference between 2020 and 2019. Again, our total and average loss. We were able to get some numbers for 2020 from our fire marshal's office just this past week, so I will send that updated PowerPoint presentation with those numbers to you. Average duration on scene, you'll note that our time did increase slightly in 2020 by just under 2 minutes. Part of the reason for that is the type of responses that we were running on in 2020. With the COVID response, not only did we have more of those type of calls, but on all type of calls, we were wearing more of our protective equipment. And a good example of that is if we have to do CPR or any real up close type of operations with individuals, then our personnel were in full PPE with the gowns and the masks in place. And thus that may take a little more time. One of the things that do affect this time is our ambulance service. And you'll note that the time has been dropping year by year. And that is largely due to the robustness of our ambulance service that's able to get there, because our crews stay on scene and continue to render aid until the ambulance arrives and then transport takes place. Fire Marshal's office, this just outlines all the prevention efforts, all the things that have been going on. Again, I have the numbers that will be updated, and I will send that to make sure that that goes to the entire City Council with that updated PowerPoint. Support services. This is the transition from our emergency management battalion chief into support services. Listed out all of those activities that were going on. We'll say during 2020, we had a executive leadership academy that was held at the Foster School of Business at the University of Washington, a phenomenal program. We had one of our captains, fire captains, and then our battalion chief, who was our support services battalion chief, attend that. I took part in that as far as doing some mentoring and also attending some of the activities. I can't say enough good about that. Both of our employees from the fire department did graduate the program. One of the focuses too of support services, of course, was assisting with opening these two new fire stations. Again, here's just some highlight photos of the development. Here's the vacant lot that's just in the grading stages for Station 51, and then to the last photo of it being completed. And below is Station 52 and some of those developments as well. Our Honor Guard continues to be active in the area. With COVID, we had a reduced number of opportunities to do that, but yet they still were able to assist with a few programs, and you can see all the masks that are in place here on this event. The final page for our annual report is talking about some of the awards and highlighting some of our employees. We did welcome one new firefighter out of the academy in June of 2020. Two captains were promoted in December of 2020, and then we had two individuals who retired. Chuck Mell, a captain, and then Greg Hansen, one of our firefighters, mid-year. Employees of the Year Award went to Battalion Chief Ben Heyman, and then Al Metzler and Ben Heyman worked on the permitting process for the City of Tukwila, along with many others within DCD and Public Works to make that come together. So that ends the annual report. What I'd like to do is, just because of time, is get through this first quarter report, and then we'll have some time for question and answers at the end. Would that work okay?
Yep, that sounds good.
All right. First quarter report, this is much shorter than our annual. Just goes through some of the things that I'll be discussing with you. Again, we just show the average response times, just keeping a real close eye on that, as well as their call volume. And again, you can see that Station 54 is pretty high in response, and Station 52 has increased in their response numbers as compared to past years. Response types, again, very, very close to what it was for all of 2020. That's staying consistent. We have noticed that the call volume has started to increase as the COVID restrictions have started to loosen up during 2021. Here again is just showing call volume for EMS and all other type of calls, and then our average response times per station. COVID highlights, these are things that are shared with council consistently, but this just shows you some of the numbers and making some comparisons. Again, just another way to take a look at it per fire station and how that breaks down as compared to the past year. Likewise for this highlight, and then administration, just some of the things that we've been working on through the first quarter. And a continuation, many projects that we're working on, not only just within Tukwila, but on a regional basis, because we do rely so much on our regional partnerships, as well as they rely on us. And so it's just so important that we stay active with the region. Some of the revenue sources that we're working on. Fire Marshal's office, again, just waiting for some of that information that will be shared as soon as that is made available for the first quarter. Operations, here's some of the things that they've been doing. The vaccinations have now become part of our mission. Well over 900 shots in arms just during the first quarter. So a lot of work done. A big shout out for our Deputy Chief Norm Golden, who joined our team in November of last year. He's been phenomenal in so many different areas, but especially with the mobile vaccination teams and just managing that team. We also have a number of firefighters that have stepped up and who have assisted quite a bit, not only with delivering the vaccines, but also assisting with some of the management processes. This is a breakdown of our overtime usage. I do want to point out that last year, we did meet a budget for 2020, and that was largely due because of the reduction in service. So the reduction in service took place where we downstaffed from a minimum staffing of 13 per day to 12. And so that carried on through the end of March, so this first quarter of 2021. As of April 1st of this year, we did return to a staffing of 13. And so we are starting to see that uptick in minimum staffing overtime, and I have been sending you daily reports on that as well. So some of our goals for the year are really outlined here, 1 through 6. Don't really need to read through those with you. And then, of course, our adjusted COVID goals. Item number 5 that I just reviewed with you is the 12 versus 13. Support services. This just outlines some of the efforts that have been going on in the first quarter. I know Jason Kineska, who is our support services battalion chief, has been working closely with Mindy Madsen, making sure that she's brought up to speed on some of the things that have been going on and just being there as a subject matter expert with the historical things. Our policies that we follow here in the city of Tukwila concerning COVID-19 really do reflect the regional policies, and we will continue to be consistent with that. Our fire stations are still off limits to non-fire department personnel, and that is still a regional policy, and we'll continue to follow that until we're able to get a better handle on the spread of this pandemic and coming bringing that under control. Our support services also has done an excellent job with some of our social media and really highlighting some of the things that we're doing. And we're constantly looking at ways that we can do better in that area and learn from some of the things that are going on. Of course, the last thing that is on this first quarter report are just the new fire stations. Our personnel are so proud of these stations. And each one of you should be as well as our city council members for your willingness to work with the community, to work with us here at the fire department to ensure that we have safe operating stations for our people to respond out of. I've had numerous conversations with our personnel, and just the pride that they have in their talk and in their descriptions of how pleased they are to be in these stations and what that means to them. So to the community, we thank the community for supporting us and for providing these lovely stations that are extremely safe for our people, really some of the most up-to-date, state-of-the-art safety things have gone into these stations. So at this point, I will stop sharing and be able to answer any questions that the committee may have for me.
Thank you, Chief Whitwer. Councilor Quinn, do you have any?
No questions.
Councilmember Egan?
Yes,
I have
a question. I hear an echo. Me or anybody can
hear that? Go ahead. I think you can. Chief Whitwer muted, so maybe that was the cause of the echo, but go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, I don't hear it now. Thank you for the presentation, Chief. I read over it before you went over it, so it was very helpful for you to go through detail on it as you were talking. One of the things that I didn't see or it begs the question is when I look at total incidents, as I was going through the packet, and I'm kind of thinking what are those total incidents? What are they? What types of total incidents are occurring. And one, can you talk about that? And B, do you think that's something that should be reflected in the report or in the memo or your presentation?
Okay, I'll unmute now. Maybe the echo comes back, but I don't hear it. So first of all, the different types, we have broken them out, you know, between EMS and others. In the past, we have gotten really granular with that. And if you feel that that's something that would be helpful, we absolutely can do that. In the large pie chart, we did break that out into about 7 different areas, such as false alarms or false type calls, EMS calls, other. And so we can provide that as well. If that's something that the council would like to have, we absolutely can produce that much granular information, and that is available to us.
So on page 55, I'm looking at, you know, 54, and, you know, it has 475 total incidents compared to other stations. And to me, I'm kind of thinking, what sort of incidents are, you know, makes up that 475?
That's a good point. Station 54, 70%+ of those calls are medical type calls. And that's true for all of our stations. So the vast majority of our calls that our people are going on are medical related.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the report. I thought the report was great. It was helpful, maybe, and maybe Zach, you can comment, see if this was helpful, but instead of like breaking down the details, I think similar to how you explain like the call response times, it might be helpful to put in the report for the community, like EMS includes these type, like EMS is this, and what was the other category? So just like a short description, doesn't even have to be a paragraph, but just so people know, like if they're questioning, well, what is EMS and how come there's so many calls, they'll know, oh, it's for medical emergencies. But because the detail that you send us every week, it breaks down, you really break down the code of the type of call and everything. And I don't think the community necessarily needs all of that. But just an explanation of EMS is this, or I don't know if that's helpful, Zach.
Yes, absolutely is helpful. It's nice to get that perspective because we do work in this every day, right? And all of you see those detailed reports as well. Every single day you're getting those. And so the community doesn't necessarily get all of that. So that's a really good perspective. Thank you. We'll definitely take a look at that and get something out for you to review.
Yeah, Cynthia, I think I'm fine with that. I guess when I was leaning on, I was just curious on that particular one that, you know, what are they? What are the different types? And, you know, I had a hunch and I kind of knew, but it's just like, if you're reading the report, does it really come at you? I didn't see that. So your suggestion is something that I definitely think would work. Thank you.
The other question I had, I see Battalion Chief Heyman on the call, and I don't know if the other council members would be interested. I know the numbers, the numbers from the fire marshal weren't included, but maybe later down the line we could get a presentation just about the work of the fire marshal. I know I would be interested in knowing where things are.
Yes, we can absolutely provide that to you.
Hello, Council. This is Ben Heyman, Fire Marshal. I would be happy to do that, and it'd be my honor to do that. It was enjoyable doing that for the code update, and I want to make sure I can answer your questions and also let you know what we're working on and what we're able to do or not do. So I'm here for you guys, and happy to do that if we could.
Awesome. Well, whenever you're ready, I connect with Laurel. Laurel, is that okay if we can schedule a future presentation?
Yes, of course. We will do that.
Okay.
And this is Ben one more time. And if I could, if there's certain things you would like to know or have answers to, if you have questions, I want to make sure that I can make the time most valuable for you guys and give you a most concise update of what's going on. So if there's questions that you have or you would like some more further detail, I'm open to hearing that or getting that from Laurel, however you want to get it to me, so I can make sure I can address those items when I do come before you.
Okay. Yeah. I think, Laurel, if you could maybe just remind us to send you questions, that would be great. Because, yeah, I think that would be better if we were able to present you with some questions that we had so you can sort of tailor your presentation.
Yes, and it would help also, so we don't have to say we'll get back to you with that. We want to make sure we give you the information why it's on the, you know, the tip of your mind, and hopefully it'll lead to further positive conversation and for the next presentation we give. So thank you for that opportunity.
Perfect. Thank you, and thank you for joining us tonight. I think those were my main questions that I had, but thank you, Chief Whitworth, for bringing that to us. And for the report, I think the annual report looks great.
You're welcome.
I think that's it. Is there any other items for the good of the order? David's like, no, you guys should take a break. Council members, are you guys good? Okay.
I'm
great.
Good. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Everybody. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your time. And we'll see each other later. Thank you.
Thank you.